Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, the stock market has been teetering and the dollar has been tottering. How much of this is due to the impact of the subprime mess, a decrease in the housing market, rise in oil prices, things that people are saying in China? Stocks are moderate and mixed so far this morning, a little this way, a little that way after yesterday's big plunge. And we're going to talk about all this with NPR's Adam Davidson, who covers business. Hi, Adam. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
Good. So just give me a few numbers here. I'm looking at the S&P up 2 points. I don't have the Dow in front of me. How's it doing after down 360 yesterday?
Down just 6 points, the last I see. So pretty much nothing. It opened a little high and then went way down and then went bounced up again. So we have no idea where it's headed.
Right. Okay. And obviously, we're not so interested in the one-day fluctuation. That's not the kind of stuff that we talk about here. But there were a lot of concerns being raised yesterday that some big underlying things may be converging, even though the market has been going up one day, down the next, up one day, down the next. And, you know, the trend this year has been up. It certainly wasn't in the 13,000s. When 2007 began, but there are these things, the subprime mess, a decrease in the housing market. We're talking about $100 oil probably any day now. And then somebody in China murmured something about getting out of the dollar. So how do you put all these pieces together?
Well, as you just said, I personally try to ignore these day-to-day fluctuations in the market. I just don't think they're particularly important, except to see that volatility has increased, that the rapid changes are happening more than they were a while ago, up, down, up, down. I remember on Thursday I was writing a news spot and I was reading the FT, the Financial Times, and I saw their headline story based on the numbers that came out on Wednesday about manufacturing, and it said, U.S. economy headed for major slowdown. And as I wrote my story, the FT updated because there was new employment numbers that had just come out, and the headline was changed to U.S. set for record growth. You know, and that's kind of what we're seeing all the time. Data point by data point, these wild swings in expectations. The U.S. is doing great. The U.S. is doing terrible. And so for me, the headline there is it's volatile. It's rapid change. And like you said, there are some major underlying adjustments to the global economy and to the U.S. economy. We're out in deep water where we've never been before, both in good ways and in bad ways. And I think for people who actually trade stocks on a moment-by-moment basis, this is playing out constantly. For people like you and I who are just kind of interested and over the long term want to understand it, you know, we don't have to monitor each moment or even each day or even each week's fluctuations, but we should know there is a radical major transformation that's happening, and it does seem that this week a bunch of those things are converging. Do you want me to go into that radical transformation?
Yeah, I sure do. Once you tease the listeners with a radical transformation, you better pay it off.
Exactly. I figured that was what you would want me to do. So, I think one major radical transformation is just, and people know this, but the sudden coming onto the stage of these emerging markets of China and India, small parts of the Middle East, small parts of Latin America, all over Southeast Asia. And this is huge. I mean, when you think that for much of our lifetime, from World War II to, say, 10 years ago, the U.S. was the manufacturer of the world, was the intellectual engine of the world economy. We were it. If you needed something made, I mean, Germany made some stuff, Japan made some stuff, England made some stuff, but we were it. And we are not it anymore. China and India are competing against us, and so are many other countries, and not just in making cheap, you know, penny a profit plush toys, but in advanced, sophisticated things. And that's a huge adjustment. And I think the headline there is, you'll do fine in America if you upgrade your skills, if you have skills. But if you're a high school dropout or if you're a high school graduate without much, there's just not going to be a place in America for you anymore.
Let me ask you about that. And that is a sad truth. Let me ask you about the place of two countries, France and China, in this transformation. We saw French President Nicolas Sarkozy come to Washington this week, get a standing ovation in Congress. This is the sort of more conservative, if that's even the right word, president of France who says he doesn't want to do what his predecessor did and set France up as some kind of counterbalance in the free world to the United States. He wants to be an ally with the United States. He gets a standing ovation in Congress. He gets a big metaphorical hug from President Bush. And what does he say when he comes to Washington? Well, that he could see an economic war breaking out between the U.S. and Europe. What did he mean by that?
Well, I think there are two economic wars between the U.S. and Europe brewing. And of course, the U.K. is on our side of that war. One is kind of a conceptual war, and maybe New York City is on the European side. We can talk about that later. But there's sort of, what is the role of the government in an economy? And, you know, Sarkozy in the French context is conservative. In America, he may be to the left of Denis Kucinich. Mm. I mean, so, you know, the French debate is a far lefter debate.
But he's trying to get people to work harder over there, be more American in the sense of having more initiative, not being so comfortable with the generous welfare state. So, you know, to that degree, he's conservative.
Right. But the what is possible for him is a much is what we, you know, what his most ambitious goals are, what we would consider of shrinking the state, are what we would consider a massive expansion of the state in America, because they do. There is, you know, this powerful welfare state. The well over 50% of the economy goes through the government. The unions have massive power, obviously, unlike in the U.S. So there's this kind of conceptual difference. This, you know, some people call it Anglo-Saxon turbo capitalism, let the market decide, make the government small, as opposed to the French and German model, which many here argue is a dying model because of their massive unemployment rates, their lack of economic growth, but a model of more of a blended democratic socialist economy.
So one, because we're going to run out of time, one war is this war of government's relationship to the economy. What's
the
other
one? War is Europe wants to become one unified bloc. America has 300 million people. We do pretty well globally. We are the world's market. Everything revolves around us. Europe wants to be that, but it has a lot of problems because anything that comes up, you just can't get France and Germany and Italy and Greece and Spain to say, okay, we agree. So our federal democracy is much, much more robust as an economic actor. I don't think Europe is where the serious American policy watchers are looking for a fight. We don't care about Europe that much. We care about Asia.
But speaking of Asia, it comes together with this Europe question because China has been heavily invested in the dollar. And yesterday, a Chinese official mentioned that it might be time for China to buy into the euro. So just how much do they have invested here, and what would occur if there was some kind of massive shift of Chinese investment from dollars to euros?
China has well over $1 trillion of U.S. debt. They buy it obsessively, constantly, billions of dollars every week. It's what keeps our interest rates low. It's what keeps people getting mortgages and buying homes. It is the fuel, much of the fuel of the U.S. economy. It's a huge thing for us. So if they stop buying dollars, yes, it would cause a lot of short-term pain. But our Treasury Department is begging them to stop because it creates all sorts of unhealthy imbalances, which I don't think I have fully enough time. The thing is, people often think, well, will the euro replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency? Not for a very long time. A reserve currency has to be something that has been around for many decades, that's very stable, that has proven its independent central bank role. The Europe economy is still, this euro is still way too young for anybody to seriously see it as a rival. And they don't even know if Italy's talking about pulling out of the euro. They don't even know how many countries are going to be in the euro. There's no way someone's going to make a major bet on the euro as opposed to the dollar now. They might start to buy more euros, but it's not going to replace the dollar anytime soon.
And give me a quick comment to this that just happened in Washington. This is from the Wall Street Journal site reporting on Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke this morning, just a few minutes ago, saying while the most recent data suggest a resilient economy, growth should slow, quote, noticeably this quarter and into 2008 as the housing slump intensifies. This is prepared testimony to the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. He said he expects the economy to strengthen later next year. I guess that would be around the presidential election. And that the Fed's recent rate reductions have put risks to growth and inflation roughly in balance. His remarks suggest that from a broad economic perspective, another rate reduction in December is unlikely, though he left the door open to future moves. Ha! Is that all Fed speak for, I don't know?
It's Fed speak for, I don't know, but don't worry so much about inflation. When he lowered the rates the other week, part of the market got really worried that inflation's going to heat up. And so what he's saying now is, don't worry, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And by the way, with that little joke, I would say Bernanke, he's a Republican. He was a loyal Bushy. He's a very independent man. I don't see any hanky-panky as far as trying to help the Republicans. I would be shocked if that were to happen.
Adam Davidson, NPR's international business and economics correspondent. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we continue our November series focusing on the most important primary you're hardly hearing anything about. In South Carolina. Stay with us.